head up to the AOH in the Bronx, big event coming up next week. And but I want to welcome Dean Martin Galvin, who is the president of the Bronx Ancient Order of Hibernians, indeed an Irish-American political activist. And there are people, of course, Martin, first of all, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much, Adrian. It's always good to be with you.
There's a generation, and maybe two, since the issue of the Troubles became, very much aware, all of us became aware that this was something that should, and rightly so, involve American interest and American support. And you were around, you're much younger than you are now, obviously, and indeed I'm catching up with you myself. But Martin, NORAID was, particularly in New York, and then, of course, across the United States, it was a great organization, but to many, particularly in Ireland and in Britain, it was perceived as, a pot stirrer of an organization, and there you were up front, and not gaining too much popularity, particularly if you went to Northern Ireland, and God forbid, you would go to Britain. Can you give us just a synopsis? I know more than myself, you're not good at synopsis. You'd like to, without going too deep, though, tell us about NORAID and its significance, particularly on our side of the Atlantic.
Thank you, Adrian. Irish Northern Aid was set up at the late 60s, early 70s. I was still in school at the exact time when it was set up by people like Mike Flannery and Matt Higgins and John McGowan, but with the help of people like Martin Lyons and others who were sort of behind the scenes. But it was set up to do a number of things. Number one, to raise money for the families of Irish political prisoners, as people were interned, as people were jailed by British courts, to give those, the families of prisoners, money on a weekly basis in accordance with need to help them out as a morale. But it was set up also for publicity, to get information out to the American people as to what was going on, and that was crucial to the support that we could generate, whether it's in Congress through people like Mario Biaggi and Ben Gilman and Hamilton Fish and so many others who would form the ad hoc committee, with the help and advice of people like Paul O'Dwyer and Frank Durkin and others. And just to do those three things, raise money for the families of political prisoners, take a position, because people from the Republican movement in Ireland were not allowed to come to the United States and speak. Visas were being denied. We became, become the spokespersons for them to articulate their point of view to get that out to the American public. So it began, it was originally most of the people would have been Irish-born. It shifted vastly during the hunger strike, so most of the people would have been born, a majority would have been born in the United States, but it performed all of those things, and it was crucial. For example, when through the Irish People newspaper, of which I was editor, I was on the person on the dais to ask Bill Clinton the crucial question about the visa for Gerry Adams, about justice for Joe Daugherty and the other deportees, those things which opened the door. During the hunger strike, the fact that there were huge demonstrations here gave politicians, our political leaders, the idea to have the propose a special envoy, which became the forerunner of John Mitchell, George Mitchell, to have the McBride principles, to have the issue around visa denial. All of those things which formed the Irish agenda and kept it going through the Reagan and Bush years. So Irish Northern Aid, we work with the AOH, we work with the Irish counties, we work with everyone, you know, particularly people like Paul O'Dwyer, Frank Durkin, and others, to do all of those essential things. And I'm very proud of the work that we did. And one of the things that we're honoring a week from Sunday, November 21st, in Rory Dolan's, we're dedicating it not only to the legacy of the Irish hunger strikers in 1981, but to all of those people who came out, marched for them, showed that Ireland was an American issue, and set the momentum for all those issues to go forward. Hope that's not too much, too broad a synopsis, as you say.
No, it's not.
Any more than yourself.
Thank you. Yeah, we've been compared in that sense that our, you know, and I'd love to drag you down, maybe, you know, that our questions are actually much longer than the answers, but you have totally encapsulated there the scene. I do want to take, though, and ask you about the time of Northern Aid. As you said, it was an organization helping out financially and definitely showing support, moral support and otherwise, to a group of people who were at the really getting, well, to be colloquial, getting battered, belted around in the north of Ireland. Now, one of the attempts that was, you know, being made at the time was to, you know, blacken the interference of Americans sticking their nose into Ireland. That made it very easy for those, number one, who said, oh, you know, that money isn't going there at all. It's going into to guns and ammunition, and NORAID is pushing all of this. You know, as you reflect on some of the, or, you know, considerable negativity at the time, was what was the reaction, and were you watching where or listening to where these rumors had started in the first place, and how, you know, how, you know, a lot of people, you know, were reacting to it and say, I wonder if all of that money is going where it's supposed to be.
Adrian, they came initially from the British government. I mean, they didn't want to say, don't give money to Irish Northern Aid. You'll be helping Irish political prisoners. You'll be generating money for publicity, for the lobbying in Congress, for all of that work to make, to show that this was an issue that was important to many Irish Americans and that we had to play a role, as we eventually would. There was also, very sadly, there was a very different role played by the Irish government. The Irish government now, I mean, I've worked with them, I speak with the AOH, they're fighting for the Stormont House Agreement and for other issues. They've attended some of our events, and they stand up to the Irish people for a degree. For some reason, there was a policy years ago, and you can't blame those who are around today who weren't even born then for what the policy was in the 70s, but there was a policy of Section 31, don't allow people like Gerry Adams and others who would become TDs to speak, to even just articulate their own views, to silence everything, to make rumors about people who later be elected to high positions within the Irish government. And those things were there. They wanted to blacken our name. Certainly it didn't do me any good being with Irish Northern Aid in terms of my political career, or sorry, my legal career, but never had a political career as a result. But those things happened. But we had to stand up for them. We were not going to let the people in the north of Ireland down. And if it took, if we had to withstand negative publicity, if we had to speak out in defiance of that and overcome it, then that was just something we had to do. If we had to be, like with me, being banned from the north of Ireland and having to go there anyway in defiance of that ban to show that the British, that censorship bans were not going to work, that was something that people in Ireland were making such, in the north of Ireland, were making such tremendous sacrifices that we wanted to stand behind them and support them in spite of just the relatively minor circumstances of obstacles that we had to overcome in terms of negative publicity. And I said on several occasions in going over to Ireland that if the Irish government would speak up for Irish citizens in the north of Ireland and doing what it should have been doing, They wouldn't have needed people like me to do it in the United States or to come over. And it's a much better atmosphere now when we're working together for justice in the north of Ireland than it was in those years. I don't know why that policy was chosen, but it's certainly one that I'm very glad doesn't exist today and is a credit to the people who make the policies decisions today.
You know, the Bronx Ancient Order of Hibernians and you as president, you know, it is, it does attract not only it's way up there in terms of the size of the chapters of the AOH, but also, and again, under your leadership, you do acknowledge a variety of people at your annual event. First up, this year, is somebody who worked quietly and consistently for the Irish, for Northern Ireland in particular, Congress Elliot Engel. Tell us, you know, about Elliot.
Well, Elliot Engel has been a champion for the Irish for more than 30 years. He got involved in Sean Mackin's case. Sean's a very prominent member of the Irish community when he was running for Congress. And as a result of that, he started to ask himself, you know, why is it people like Sean Mack and so many others, they're such productive and prominent citizens here. They do so much for the Irish community, for business, everything. They're very much in touch with law enforcement, you know, as was Alecky McAllister and so many others. But you put these same people in the circumstances of the north of Ireland, and they were there. They were became prisoners. They were fighting against British rule. And Elliot took up the issue of visa denial. Why can't people like this, Gerry Adams and others, come to the United States and speak? He went to Belfast to visit himself, see for himself. And from that, he took on every Irish issue there was, whether it's visa denial, whether it's McBride principles, whether it's plastic bullets, whether it's immigration. Every Irish issue, just up to right now, we're dealing with British legacy laws. They want to cut out any way for the Irish to get the truth about those that the British murdered, either themselves or in cooperation with loyalists, using loyalist criminals. And Elliot held it. When that was first done, Elliot held Foreign Affairs Committee hearings in Congress, brought over Mark Thompson, brought over Professor Mark McGovern to put the word out from the very beginning in Congress. So for all of those things and so many others that I couldn't take up your whole program naming, Elliot Engel, we want to honor him and show him that the Irish community will never forget what he did for us. And we're very grateful for the reception. He's very pleased with it. We're very proud to have him and honor him.
And you're bringing out the, excuse the expression, the heavy guns for the event, the National Ancient Order of Hibernians president. Danny O'Connell is also being honored, but he's, I'm sure he'd be equally honored to, you know, to congratulate Elliot Engel and to thank him. Danny is coming in.
Adrian, I'm going to expose something over the airways. Maybe I shouldn't. But originally, when I asked Danny to come, I said, you know, I'm just going to be getting back from Ireland. That's a long trip. I have a lot of stuff. I don't know if I could do it. And then he said, who are the other honorees? And I said, Elliot Engel. He said, for Elliot Engel, I want to be there and congratulate him also. So that was my secret weapon. Elliot was my secret weapon to get Danny here. He's not only a national president. He's just back from Belfast, where he met with some of the families who have been victims of British injustice for 50 years, the Spring Hill Massacre, the Sean Graham's Bookies Massacre, and others. He was elected during a time of COVID when you couldn't do anything, and he overcame everything with just with webinars, with his leadership and force of personality. He's a great president, and he's made the AOH much stronger than it's ever been, particularly in terms of speaking out against British injustice and for those who are still victimized under British rule. So we're also proud to honor him.
We were, and we always are, you know, happy to have him as a guest on this program.
A former guest to show you. We should have put that on his list of qualifications. Interviewee by H. Flannelly.
Oh, my God. Okay. Thanks. Okay. Now, Mike Shanley, again, he's been around for a long time, and he of Irish Northern Aid, and he'll be honored indeed by the Bronx County AOH on Sunday the 21st, which is a week from tomorrow.
Right, that's at Rory Dolan's. And the reason we're honoring Michael, we have a special dedication. People are remembering the 1981 hunger strike, and they're honoring that legacy. But we want people to remember that a big part of the victory of the hunger strikers, which they inspired, was people who came out across the United States, you know, 10,000 on the day that Bobby Sands died, 20,000 to stand at Lincoln Center with Maura McDonald and Elizabeth O'Hara and Sean Sands and Malachi McCreesh, brothers and sisters of hunger strikers who died, and with John Deary, who was also on the platform
Absolutely.
With me that day. But all of those things, which showed the British that they had set out to say that Bobby Sands and the other prisoners were criminals, and instead it put the British in a position where Prince Charles came to the United States and was at Lincoln Center, and 20,000 people would be there shouting. He would have to sneak in the back door. He would have to, after that, no more royal family visits to the United States. They made themselves, their royal symbols, into criminals. So Michael Shanley is going to be honored in his own right. He worked with Joe Daugherty Committee, other events, work that he did during the hunger strike. But we're also honoring everyone who marched at that time, and particularly we'll also remember people like Frank Dirk and like Paul O'Dwyer, who was so much a part of those organizing those protests. We want to honor everybody in America, across the country, and remember them. We've got people traveling long distances from Boston, Rhode Island, from Hartford, Connecticut, from the Midwest for that. And Mike Shanley is going to represent everyone who worked and supported the hunger strikers at that time. And we're also going to have a special little moment or two to ask everybody to stand up and honor and applaud the work that they did, because I believe that that was a springboard, American politicians seeing that, that inspired our politicians to get behind things like the McBride principles, the special envoy, the visa denial issue, and sustain them during the Reagan and Bush years when we had administrations that were very unsympathetic to Irish issues. They were more sympathetic to Margaret Thatcher, and had that on the agenda so that Bill Clinton and Jerry Brown had to face those issues and questions and were there to say things would change if there was a Democratic president after the 1992 election. And that's a historic contribution, and it began with the inspiration of the hunger strikers.
Okay, and of course, listen, we've kept the best wine until last. You know, I remember the wedding at Cana, weren't we all there? And who was the chief photographer at that time? Nuala Purcell, who...
I don't know if she'd appreciate being put in that our age group. You know, you and I would have been there, Adrian, but Nuala is much, much younger than us. I just want to go public and say that, so I just defend her, so...
Yeah.
I just made
you see, I was going to defend her as well, and then I said, let me stand back here. You know, Galvin is the criminal lawyer, you know, and I have everything to lose here. She is an amazing Irish supporter, in addition to being a Class A supporter and photographer, you know, at so many occasions, as in fact is her sister, Margaret.
Yeah.
That, you know, she is, again, and they are, first of all, she's the head and president of the Tipperary Association, and at a time when, Irish county organizations are, you know, they're up against it, as indeed so many other organizations there, but you have, it's people like, Nuala Purcell, you know, who they have a job ahead just to you know, to revive and make sure the county organizations and United Irish Counties and that these organizations now really need, promotion, and no, they didn't go away. And, you know, so it's great. It really is. And we definitely want to, offer our congratulations, and to begin with watch your shins. But anyway, she's great. And we're delighted.
The interesting thing is, to me, or surprising thing, is she's called me a number of times to tell me about prominent people, I won't mention names now, but who are going to be there and honor her, and she seems to be surprised, humble. And I keep telling her, the work that she does, just providing a record, a photographic record of everything that happens in the Irish community, which then goes out through the Irish Echo and the Irish Voice and shows people around the country what we're doing as well as locally, that's invaluable. That she's so well-liked. She's so patient with everybody. She tries to get me photographs of me where I don't look too old, which is very, very difficult these days. Mm. And she does a great job. She's getting tremendous support, people sending in ads in the journal to congratulate her. And I'm really pleased with all of our honorees, and she's a tremendous honoree, and all of them deserve it so much. They're making this dinner a really great success in spite of my name being attached to it.
Yeah.
And Nua is really great and just deserves, as do all of them, to be honored.
Yeah. And the only thing part that I would disagree with there is you implied, you know, that Nuala was, you know, this person who as a photographer at Irish events, you know, would gingerly go around. That the same Nuala, mind you, she smartened. You need to smarten yourself up. I tell you, you get one shot, okay? Nuala says, "Here, go over there," if you want to be in it, listen to her. Yeah, I know.
There you go. Well, look, I got broken in by Kevin Kennedy, so she's by comparison now we're both going back.
By
the way, Adrian, before I finish, I just want to we're speaking about great honorees, and I want to commend the presidential committee who picked you to honor you. Very much overdue and very well deserved. And I have to congratulate you. I don't want to sign off or be cut off without doing that. I feel very bad afterwards.
Thank you, Martin. I'm not allowed to actually react because, in case the tongue gets stuck in cheek and then, you know how it is yourself. But I'm happy about that. I'm also I think that with the variety not only of great honorees for the Bronx AOH dinner coming up next. By the way, where is it taking place?
It's Sunday week, November 21st at Rory Dolan's, 3 to 7. You have to call to see if we can fit you in. It's very close to being a sellout, and you can still take ads and congratulate Nuala or any of the other honorees. You can email me at mgalvin, GALVINESQ at AOL.com, or Bob Nolan or Jack McCarrick. But we're really tight on space inside. Yeah. So don't just show up on the day. Just call ahead and try and contact us, and we'll see if we can fit you in. But that's all we can do.
Yeah, I know. And, you'd be lucky at this stage of the game. Would it do any good if anybody said, Flannelly told me if you call Gavin, Martin Galvin, that you're in and get you, like a folding chair or something? I'm going to pretend that works. And
well, if I did that, that would definitely keep them out, for myself.
I know.
If Martin Galvin told you, that would be it.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
for you, though, Adrian, it may work. It definitely would work for Anya Sheridan, but I don't know.
And don't assume that if Anya Sheridan is there, that you'd be taking me with her. I mean, you know. Listen, wanted to again to, you know, to thank you for what you have done and to recognize what you have done. And without divulging your age, if you started, you know, your interest and your activism in, you know, in, was it high school or college? No, I don't want to give.
I just was finishing. I was interested, and I used to start going to Ireland when I was in college at Fordham, you know, just to go over to Ireland, and I would spend a little bit of time in the north as well as with my own relatives in County Offaly on the bog doing that sort of stuff. But just going to Ireland at that time and seeing for myself what people have to go through. If, you know, people would just be the same as me. They were Irish. They would have Irish names, hard workers, everything. They'd have no prospect of getting jobs. They'd be hassled or put up against the wall by the RUC or British troops, all the things that they had to do. And it just made me want to support them when I finished school and just got involved with Irish Northern Aid and the AOH, and also I think it was the American Committee for Ulster Justice at that time with Frank
Absolutely,
Durkin and,
yeah.
and Paul.
Mm.
That's a forerunner of the Brehons.
Okay. Mark, good luck. And again, it was nice that you should point out and have it directed, I know, at me that you know, there are only a few seats left, and you'd have to be nearly genuflecting to get one of the tickets. You know, it's great, and rightly so. Thank you. Thank
you
again.
Thank you very much,
okay.
Adrian.
You're very welcome.
Always.
Okay.
Great.
Martin, wait, 1 minute. Yeah, give us a telephone number, too, for, is there a telephone number you can give?
347-880-1403. That's 347-880-1403. And there's a second number, and I'll look at it right now. It is 718-597-6327. That's 718-597-6327. Or as I said, 347-880-1403.
Okay. And also, friends, it will be on our Facebook.
And
it is.
I should also
it is. Yeah. Anya telling me it's there already. Yeah. Okay.
We have Andre Murphy coming out to speak. She's going to talk for Relatives for Justice with the new legacy proposals. She's going to tell us how important these are and how Irish America has to help the way we did in the hunger strikes and the way we did so many other times. And I
okay.
don't want to.
I'm glad I got you today when you're in a good mood. Okay, thank you. Friends, it is, and maybe this is a good time for me to let you know that we are on Facebook, and it's Facebook, Adrian Flannelly, yes. And again, it's the annual dinner dance coming up, indeed, for Bronx Ancient Order of Hibernians. All right. After that, that fiery dissertation there that, that Martin Galvin delivered, I think. Oh, you know, there's a song here. Maybe we can dedicate it to Nuala Purcell, you know, head of the Tipperary Association, and it's one that maybe you haven't heard before.
With a typical tip, tip, typical Tipperary miss. She's a darling young slip with a rosy lip that you dearly love to kiss. From the tip of her coat to the tip, tip top of her nose, I love her so. I'd just like to take her and squeeze her, for I know that it wouldn't displease her. She lives in Tipperary, many miles away from here. I'd just like to meet her and see her and greet her. I'm sure I could eat her the sweet little dear. She lives so very far away, I'd have to wait a year. Till I take a notion to sail o'er the ocean to Ireland. Faith, it's me that's nearly crazy. For me, Tipperary Daisy. All the day, me heart's uneasy. For the thing I find that is on me when they ring the bell and I'll shout hip hip hooray. And the whistle will toot and away we'll scoot and we'll choo-choo down the bay. I'll wave you goodbye as we're sailing from over the top of the railing. We'll cross the briny ocean to the tiny Emerald Isle. I'd give me less penny if I hadn't any, big or as many, to see her sweet smile. She used to sit for next me down beside the stile. But I was a rover, bedad, I came over from Ireland. Faith, it's me that's nearly crazy. For me, Tipperary Daisy. All the day, me heart's uneasy. For the thing I find that is on me mind is the darling girl I left behind. Far off, in dear old Tipperary.
Joe, my partner.